Extravaganza.
What is up, all you horror hounds and guardians of the macabre? Welcome back. This is the Horror Pop Extravaganza, episode 17 again. I am one of your hosts, Pops Ghostly, and with me as always is...
Tilts Giggle Fresh.
Give me that one more time.
Tilts Giggle Fresh. It's Dutch.
Tilts. Okay. I'm Dutch. My name is Dutch. Tilts. Okay. Tilts Giggle Fresh. I like that, though. That's a pretty good one. What's up, my friend? How are you today?
I'm lovely, as always.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Did you get ready to talk about what we're ready to talk about today? Because I prepped a tiny little bit. I did not rewatch the movie, but I watched a little behind the scenes that I had never seen before that was on my DVD or whatever, or the digital one. But it like got me on a hype train where I'm like, fuck, this movie means more to me than I probably even want to admit. Like, right? This movie really is special. It really is so special.
Yeah, it came to me at the right time in my life to love it. And it's just, it drips fucking cool, dude.
In every single scene. And of course, we are talking about 1996's From Dusk Till Dawn. We are so ready. But before we go, because this one's got a lot of people to talk about. So before we jump into this wonderful little slice of horror cinema, why don't you lay it all out there, dude? How in 1996, what led up to this getting made? Who's all in it and all that cool stuff?
This is when two worlds collide, when a tornado meets a volcano, dude. And it just was beautiful. And it happened back at fucking Sundance when... Robert Rodriguez was there promoting El Mariachi, and he meets this little unknown dude named Quentin Tarantino, and Quentin Tarantino says, "Oh dude, I saw El Mariachi. That's a fucking cool ass movie, dude. You filmed it in Mexico." He's like, "I wrote a movie that takes place in Mexico. It's about vampires."
Yes.
And the rest is fucking history.
So, but at the time, Tarantino is promoting Reservoir Dogs. They're both, you know, these budding, like you said, indie guerrilla dudes. And I think their connection more than anything else was they were like, "Yo, you've seen Super Cop? I've seen Super Cop." Right, like, right. "You've seen this? I've seen this." It was that friend where you're like, I didn't know any other people existed on the planet, you know, like me, who were into all of this shit, you know, all the exploitation, all the fucking foreign shit, like all the cool, really... genre cinema. These guys were both, and I'm sure when they met, it was just like fucking awesome, you know. And like you said, they immediately became fast friends and the poster children for the guerrilla filmmaking that we would see, you know, even with Kevin Smith a little bit, but kind of that mid 90s turn where we started to see people talking about movies and movies and, you know, taking the love of action cinema or fucking horror cinema or, you know, martial arts cinema, whatever it is, and just making this weird fucking crazy new thing out of it, but doing it with no money. Because Robert Rodriguez, when he made Mariachi, was like, "I'm selling plasma and shit." You know, he did. Kevin Smith, "I'm maxing out every credit card I have and, you know, selling all my comic books." Tarantino, I don't know if he ever really had. He's just a video store kid who fucking showed up, met, I was watching on the documentary, he was talking about when he met Tom Savini. Tom was the guest of honor at a convention, and Quentin was just there like, "Yo, would you come to the video store and like sign some shit and whatever?" But, you know, had that understanding and that level of knowledge where it's like, dude, yeah, you're a true student of this art form without any schooling. You know, you right. just, you saw what worked and had the eye to see like, yes, that was cool. This is cool. And then they were just like, fuck it, let's do it. You know, anything we can do, everybody's helping out. Like on Mariachi, you know, it's kind of like a Night of the Living Dead or, you know, any of these Texas Chainsaws where it's a group of people who believe in somebody. And if you listen to Robert Rodriguez or Tarantino talk, it's probably pretty easy to follow those dudes around and be like, yeah, this is exciting. Right. You know, they're like giant man children. It's cool. But this thing, like you said, it was Tarantino. He wrote it, but he also stars in it. And why don't you give us all the other stars, though, before I start naming any of the other names here?
I mean, you look at it now, and this is a fucking star-studded cast. Yeah, I mean, but back then, it was just a bunch of independent people, really, doing independent shit.
Right. Well, I mean, Harvey had done quite a bit up until this point.
Harvey was the name.
Yes, yes, yes. And that's why he got him for Reservoir Dogs. He's like, you know, we need the one kind of big name. And Harvey in this one is the biggest name. Because even up to this point, like, we had Clooney on ER and shit like that and stuff. But he wasn't the George Clooney mega star that we know him from Ocean's 11 and all of those things that became huge, crazy blockbuster successes, which this was a success as well, if I remember right. Like, nobody ever, you know, people went and saw it, I think. And people love it across the board. It's pretty much well received by critics, fans, everyone alike. It's yeah, it's a great one. But yeah, Harvey Keitel, I think, yeah, at that time, really, maybe Cheech had done a bunch of shit, but he was, you know, Rodriguez's homeboy. And same with, like, Danny Trejo had kind of followed Rodriguez up through, which I love. Danny's my dude, man. I love me some fucking Danny Trejo. That's a great story. Great story. But please read the cast, because now I'm just sitting here naming them all off and shit.
All right. So, yes, we have Harvey Keitel, who did this because he had worked with Tarantino on Reservoir Dogs. Actually, the way he got Reservoir Dogs made was because Harvey Keitel's wife is a hairdresser who was doing Tarantino's mom's hair, I believe. And fucking Tarantino was like, hey, give him the script I wrote. That was when it was able, you were able to do that shit. But right. This was, you got to remember, this is all pre-internet. So two right. fucking forces like that meeting each other were rare. And you lived in this world where you're like, I'm a fucking freak and there's no one else like me. The internet right. showed us that we're all out there and we can connect. That's how you and me met.
right. Over Predator, dude. Over Predator.
Yeah, man.
Then you're right. So these two, I mean, they were at Sundance. You know what I mean? That's a great spot if you're going to meet some fuck. And especially after the success of, like, Clerks and shit. Bigger distributors are looking now, you know, Cannes, Sundance. Like, it was always a place to be, but now it's like, hey, we're going to go make fucking real money at Sundance and shit. True. Or sell our movie, you know, we want to sell this stuff. So to meet somebody like that, but you're right, for those two to meet, it's like Abbott meeting fuck Costello, right. dude. It's a weird fucking once in a lifetime opportunity.
Yeah. We had George Clooney, who was just looking for something the opposite of his character on ER.
Yes.
And so this character fit for him, you know, and he showed us that, like, he has this, like, style and grace that just, like, emanates out of the man.
Right. The Geckos, dude, is great names too. Oh, yeah. Great names in this movie.
Great. Juliette Lewis, who'd of course been in some stuff, but was not, like, a huge star at the time. Tarantino starring in his own crap. Like, he's like the Alfred Hitchcock of fucking
right.
grindhouse cinema. Introducing Ernest Liu, who doesn't even have a fucking picture on IMDb. That's so sad.
Oh, and he was the kid, the son?
He was the son, yeah. And, like, yeah. I saw him Jacob. In a couple other things.
Was it Jacob?
Jacob. Scott Fuller.
There, Scott and Jacob was his dad. Yeah.
We had the one, the only, the chesticles, Selma Hayek.
Again, followed, you know, along with Robert from, you know, Desperado, and then came into this one and would continue to be, you know, he carries around a stable of, just like Tarantino, there's people these two really like to fucking work with, and they put them in a lot of shit. They have a great eye for great talent. But yes, Selma is just stunning. She's stunning in this thing. Maybe her best, as far as selling her, you know, sexuality, for lack of a better term, she uses it in this movie in a way that I don't think we ever see again. And it's just, she's great, dude. She's great.
I will tell
always
you,
great. Selma's always good.
I'm an out and proud pervert, and this is the hottest scene that's not naked that I've ever seen.
Her dancing, yes.
She is fully clothed through the whole thing, but I have never wanted to suck alcohol off a woman's toe so bad in my life.
And oh, the fact that he wrote it into there, dude.
Oh yeah, and the, but then, yeah,
we didn't know at the time. We didn't know at the time. Just like,
oh, that's hot. We didn't realize that Quentin is busting loads the whole entire time. How many takes do you think he made her do?
182. There's nobody else there. He's just like, we got to keep sucking on your toes.
We got to practice this scene because, you know, the physicality of it all. We got to make sure the alcohol actually, like, drips off your toe. We got Cheech, and Cheech is from fucking Cheech and Chong, had a huge career, but definitely was, like, waning in the 90s. He hadn't really come out.
Kinda like a Travolta, Cheech. Dude. Yeah, kind of, yeah, you know, yeah. Did a Travolta thing like Tarantino did with Pulp Fiction. You know, he was on a fucking downward, and then it was like, hey, bring this dude back. And you're right, and Cheech in this is so good. Like, my favorite lines in this whole movie, I think all of them, most of them are delivered by Cheech. And it's just, he's so good.
What's amazing too is you get Cheech at this time and you're like, I love this man so much, I'm gonna let him play three parts in this movie.
Right.
I don't give a fuck if that's silly. He's playing three parts.
And it worked beautifully.
It works great, dude. Like, yep. I forget that he played three different parts. I'm just like, oh, yeah, dude, that fucking border cop was awesome. And so was the
the caller, the Harker at the bar at the Titty Twister. And then the fucking lead, you know, cartel guy.
So good. Then we got Danny Trejo fucking killing a dude. But nobody knew who he was at the time.
You just knew it was the dark skinned guy with a dope ass lady tattooed all over his chest. Like that, we just ate in Desperado with them fucking knives, dude. So good. But yeah, that's what you knew him as. And Danny's story is one we could spend a whole episode talking about, you know, being in prison and shit, how he got into the industry, teaching people to fight and stuff. And then, but has really turned his fucking self around to become a positive force in this world. That your stories, like he's stopping on the side of the road, helping people in car accidents and shit. Just like, no, you know, just because it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, dude.
But yeah, and Danny is might be the hardest working person to ever grace Hollywood, because the dude has been in so much. And sometimes he'll be like, I'll be watching a movie, forget I was even in that motherfucker. And yeah. Like, hey, there I am. Like, that's awesome.
Yeah, dude. He's got like probably like the most credits on IMDb of like anybody.
Dude,
he fucking shows up for people's student films, dude. He's like, yeah, he fucking cook me a burrito and I'll be there, dude.
I think because we talked about this a little bit last time on the last episode, and we'll be real brief on this just right here. But I think it's because dude knows suffering. He knew what fucking suffering felt like. And so he's grateful as fuck that he's like, I'm Danny fucking. So, yeah, why not? I'll be in your movie, dude. Like, this is awesome that people still even give a fuck and I'm not in prison anymore. Could, you know, remember some of that shit, then I'm sure he's just high on life.
I mean, his career is so cool because he's been in like Heat, and then he's been in like your fucking friend's
Badasses.
Film. Like, yeah.
Badasses. Yeah, that one where he's in
the bus and shit. Fuck yeah, dude.
Yeah.
He was just up here in Spokane doing a movie, dude. He did this thing called Tim Travers that was all the people that I worked with worked on that. And he's so fucking cool.
You should have just watched him do his thing. You should have been like,
I tried to get onto that set so hard, dude.
Yeah, I'm sure, man. I'm sure.
I saw the premiere and everything, and I was just like, what a cool dude. You know, he just like shows up to Spokane for a couple of nights. He went out drinking with the crew afterwards. Like, he's the man.
He really is somebody that it's like, there's those few in Hollywood that you see and you're like, that's a real fucking, like Adam Sandler is a real human being, dude.
Right.
Danny Trejo is just a real human being. Fucking doing his thing. So yeah, great. Always good to see Danny. Always good.
And then the aforementioned Tom Savini, somebody who is a behind the scenes guy mostly, but I think after this, everybody remembers him as fucking Sex Machine.
Sex Machine. That gun, dude. It's the gun that everybody remembers is so badass. And, you know, Tom plays a great part in this, but he shines as an effects man. Yes. I mean, and he does all of the, you know, I'm sure he did all the effects on this, or was at least, I mean, he had to have done them.
Him and Greg Nicotero, like the two.
Talk about a dream team, dude. Yeah. Right. Talk about a dream team. But yes. And you know, they're both practical guys, which for me is like, great. You know, the more the better. But Tom is so cool as an effects guy in this, and so cool as a fucking actor in this too. I think Sex Machine is an iconic, just written to be the coolest motherfucker ever, and he pulls it off. And I think he probably, you know, wanted to play that because Tom's not like a very big guy or anything like that. He's like, dude, I want to be the coolest, baddest motherfucker, which I still wouldn't like try to fight Tom. He's intimidating as fuck looking, but I'd be like, yo, we're good, right? Don't fucking dismember me. But yeah, great, great character, Sex Machine.
He's the only guy who can come in and be like, I want to be named Sex Machine. I want to have a dick gun. And I want to have a fucking bullwhip.
Yeah. To snatch beers and shit. Not even just to whip people around.
Do you know the guy he snatches the beer from is Nicotero?
Oh, I never even, right on, man. Yeah. I'll have to put, next time I watch it, I'll be sure to keep my eyes peeled.
Yeah. Nicotero fucking flips.
This is probably that's a young Nicotero. That's almost 30 years ago. Yeah, so he looks, you know, cause I didn't really start seeing Greg's face until I would say the Walking Dead.
Right.
And that's where he was really on TV a lot with the Talking Dead and all of that stuff. But cool. That's cool to know. Yeah, that's awesome.
He looks like a roadie from Metallica in this. It's awesome.
Right on.
Fred Williamson, dude. The fucking great Fred Williamson.
So good. Dude, so good.
He's so good.
Dude, in the... what was I just watching on the behind the scenes thing? But what's his character's name? Do you got it right there in front of you?
Frost.
Frost. That's it. Frost. Yeah. But I want to say he had like the cigars and shit, like the whole, even while they're interviewing him, like Stogie looking on the whole time. Yeah. He's like Arnold. Like, I take my Stogie anywhere. I don't give a fuck.
You can tell that shit's real because it is fucking juicy on the end, dude.
Yeah, dude. He's gnawing on the end of that thing. And he plays our trucker war vet who's super cool. You know, your typical standard, like the PTSD is coming back and this dude's ready to get back into it. He's great. Great. All of them are fucking great, dude. This cast, everybody. Dude,
this cast, it fucking makes my nipples hard. Here comes another one, dude. Fucking Michael Parks.
My favorite ever. Michael Parks to me is the fucking pinnacle of acting talent, dude. I have never watched that man pull out. And you want to talk about playing two characters, like his Kill Bill shit is so radically opposite. Yeah. You know, the Texas Ranger Marshall character going to the fucking pimp in wherever they're at, Columbia or some shit, and he's cutting girls' face, just talks real slow, and and then Tusk, all of it, dude. Michael Parks is just fire.
So fire. And I remember not knowing who the fuck this dude was when I first saw this, and I was like,
I didn't either.
This Ranger fucking eats up this scene, dude. Like, his draw is so perfect, dude. You just
give me about that hooch there, Benny. Give me that. Feel that he's hot motherfucker of a day, isn't it? All these cock sucking bastards killing people left. It's just, you're right. I could watch that scene on repeat. That scene, and then you couple it, he almost plays the same exact scene in Kill Bill. You know what I mean? When he shows up to the church and shit, like it's almost
he's the same character.
Oh, no, I know he's the same character, okay, but yeah, even like the layout of like this building and giving him this platform, they probably just remembered like, yo, just put Michael Parks, fucking let him talk with some crazy shit around him and just let this dude speak. Because, yeah, Michael Parks is top notch.
Top notch. Another top notch guy who wasn't in the movie for very long. Might even forget he was there. John Saxton. John Saxton was the cop who was like, we will bring them to justice.
Right. And why not bring in Saxon as a fucking genre beast, dude? And they were probably like, dude, this dude hung out with Bruce Lee and shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah, dude.
For them, that was like, yo, Black Christmas, Nightmare on Elm Street. Like, bring Saxon, because Saxon is another one. That's one of Shayna's favorites. I'm always like, your dude's on TV. She's like, God, I love that man. And I'm like, I can't deny you because I love that man. Like, he's just a great presence. He's just really great.
He's so good.
But yeah. I don't remember that. But what's on TV?
He's on the TV.
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
And then another one who was on the TV that we might not remember, Kelly Preston, wife of John Travolta.
I do not remember that.
She's the one. She is like a schlocky news reporter, and she's like, the kill count is up to 7.
Yes. And it like ting ting. Yeah. Got like a telly counting on the television. That's right. Yeah. Oh, such good shit.
Fucking John Hawks, dude, is Pete Bottoms. From the fucking liquor store, dude. And he again, him and
that scenery up, dude, with him and Clooney and Tarantino. He's, I didn't mouth the words, fucking help me. I didn't say shit. I should be winning a fucking Oscar for this shit right here. Just perfect. You're right. It's amazing.
He's sitting there having a chaw, dude, spitting into his cup. Fucking, yeah, so good.
How you doing, Earl? Yeah, and they just, so good.
And last but not least, Tito from Tito and the Tarantulas, dude.
Dude, so good.
So good. And he's always in, he was in Desperado too. He was fucking, she just,
they're in all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I think they are why that scene is so sexy. That fucking song is one of the sexiest songs I've ever heard, dude. Like it is, I've got it on so many different playlists and that shit will come on. I'm just like, fuck, that hits good. Like it's, I don't know.
It was just great, dude. It was a mix of music and 90s, classical, dude.
We got in, and you know, both of these guys are soundtrack people too, especially Tarantino. You know, he is a big fucking, his soundtracks matter. Rodriguez, not quite as intense, I feel like, but yeah, soundtrack, great.
So fantastic. Good. And yeah, this was a soundtrack time, dude, when you could like, you'd leave the theater, dude, and go over to the fucking record store, get the soundtrack. Yeah. And that's how you lived the movie, dude. And it makes me so fucking sad that movies aren't that important anymore. They just flash in the pan. They come and go. Soundtracks aren't a thing because they're too much money. So they just fucking,
you see them sometimes, but yeah, it's never really. And you know, yeah, you would, you'd be like, I need Empire Records. I need The Crow. I need fucking From Dusk Till Dawn. I had the score soundtrack from Escape from LA, the fucking John Carpenter. You're right. I would just sit and listen to it sometimes on the school bus and shit and just like be in the movie and just like,
cause that's how one way you could relive it.
Right, we're right, because it took a year and a half before that shit hit any kind of physical media.
I remember picking up like Fangoria magazine, dude, and just seeing a picture from Dusk Till Dawn. You're like, oh, I want to fucking watch it again.
Right, so good.
Yeah, it's cool having stuff at our fingertips, but at the same time, like, we forget like how important
the magic isn't there. Yeah, that magic of grabbing onto it and having a physical copy. I mean, this one, real quick, funny story. My kid brother, who was 8 years younger than I am, I had the VHS of this, and he told me later on in life, he's like, yo, at like 14, that VHS, there were parts on that where the pause button had run that motherfucker ragged. Because he's like, there's just titties everywhere. I loved it. I was like, dang. Yeah. I'm glad I could help you on that journey, I guess, by leaving some Dusk Till Dawn VHS around.
Why is my cassette all sticky?
Right? Gross.
All right, anyway, dude, you ready to hear what this movie's about?
Yes, lay it on me.
All right, here we go. Two criminals and their hostages unknowingly seek temporary refuge in a truck stop populated by vampires with chaotic results.
That sums it up.
What the fuck? Who is this guy that writes this shit, dude?
I don't know, but I want to say that I watched the trailer for this on my bonus features, the original trailer. Yeah, dude. I miss movie guy, dude. His voice. Dude,
his voice. It just would get you amped up as soon as you hear it, dude. Somewhere right. In the Arizona desert. Like,
right, you're like, what? He was so good. Movie guy was so good. But you're right, our IMDb guy, you should get that job. Be like, pay me fucking $40 a fucking hour to sit here and write these great things up. And they'd be hilarious if
Here's the thing, is that the guy is like fucking clueless, like he's never seen the movie, but he kind of fucking nails it every time, which I hate.
He does. He keeps it simple. It's probably a fucking AI, dude. They're probably like, watch this movie a couple times and write a fucking synopsis. You know, it's... Okay, so let's actually talk about this thing. Let's
talk about this movie, even though we've already given up the whole plot.
Dude, I feel like we did. But this opening sequence is what sets the tone. We mentioned, you know, we've got Michael Parks, but we don't know what's going on in the back yet. We just get this great scene of dialogue between these two, talking about it being hot in Texas. These two criminals are on the loose. They've already killed a couple people. It's a damn shame. He's there to buy a bottle of fucking whiskey. And they have this great conversation. Then out of nowhere, fucking Michael Parks just gets smoked, dude. Yeah. Fucking gone. Blood all over Pete. And he's standing there like, what the hell? What the hell? Like, this terrible, terrible. And Clooney and Tarantino come out, and they've got a couple of kid hostages, like teenagers. And they're talking to him. And Tarantino's like, I saw you mouth the words, help us. And Tarantino, when he wants to, he can act. He's great in this. Good, I think this part, you know, he essentially probably wrote it for himself. He's like, I can do that. But this is where we first pick up that there might be something wrong, because it's Richard and Gordon. No, what are their names? Richie. Yeah, Seth and Richie. And we kind of figure out quick that like something's not right, quite right with Richie. He is just like, yeah. I don't know how else to say it. Just like, fuck, something's wrong with this dude.
We've seen that he didn't say shit to the cop.
Right.
And he's saying he did. And Clooney was where he couldn't see. So he's like, do I trust my fucking brother, who I know is a little off his rocker? Right. Or what do I do? You know, he's stuck in this like hard position. And what I love about this scene is that Clooney fucking cocks and uncocks that gun 14 times.
Dude, because he's yelling at him, because Richie takes one in the hand, he can pretty much see through his fucking hand hole.
Oh yeah, dude.
And he's down, they're hiding behind the shit, and he's like, you okay, Richie? And you're right, he keeps unloading and this dude peeps behind the thing the whole time like, never said help us. And he's trying to load a fucking gun. And this is where Clooney's cool comes all out. Just fuck, spill it everywhere. He fucking kicks the shelf in the store, like knocks over a bottle of lighter fluid, grabs a thing of toilet paper, and he's like, on the count of three, Richie, I want you to fuck shoot all the bottles behind him. And he lights the toilet paper on fire, fucking chucks it at him as Richie jumps, bang, 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 everybody's shooting, and the fucking place lights on fire. They are arguing on their way out as this shit's blowing up everywhere. Great scene, dude, great scene. He's like, low profile, Richie, what the fuck don't you understand about a low profile?
As the thing's blowing up behind him.
So and like huge behind him. And that was the little bit they were talking about, that effect in the behind the scenes. They said that was the most dangerous shit they did in the whole movie. They were like,
Clooney and Tarantino walking away from an explosion.
They're like, it's blowing up all around us. They're like, they didn't even ask us if we were okay with it. They just assumed. Yeah. But I guess the effects guy was like, yo, I'm going to stand close to it in case this goes bad because I don't want to live through it if I'm the guy that killed fucking Quentin Tarantino and George Clooney. He's like, I don't want nothing to do with it.
That's awesome.
But what a great effect, dude. And they go out to this old, you know, muscle car, some kind of charger, some shit like that. Take off tearing ass down the desert highway. We get this cool little see-through into the trunk and we realize that
that was such a weird thing. And I look back at it now as a filmmaker and I'm like, fucking genius, dude.
Yeah.
Like how else do you establish that someone's in the trunk, dude? Fucking show a fucking peephole through it. Same thing when Pete goes over the counter on fire, which is a great fucking effect. He lands on fucking popcorn kernels and you start hearing them pop.
They start pop. That's right. That's right. Cause they had the popcorn. Some burning ass Pete. They take off and they're fixing up Richie's hand, dumping alcohol on it and stuff.
He tapes the motherfucker.
But you know what I mean? I mean, best you can do, like alcohol and duct tape. Dude, I was in a military where they were like, yo, you do what the fuck you got to do. You know, you super glue that shit together if you have to, which we did. Like people just carry around suit like, I'm cut the fuck open. Okay, here, squeeze it. And you just dump super glue on it and we'll be done. I'm sure Brian Gunn could tell you all kinds of crazy shit that they did. My brother told me one time when he had a couple guys, when they were over in the sandbox and shit, they would drop hot sauce into their eyes to stay awake. Holy like just do a little hit of like Tabasco, dude. So your eyes couldn't fucking shut. So you're just sitting there wide open, blinking all night long. So they take off down the desert. We see the hostage in the back, middle-aged woman. And this maybe is where the TV cuts in. And I think we get the exposition about them kind of, they've killed however many people, you're right. And it's very like, it's almost scary how spot on that is to the real news.
Yeah, dude.
Almost scary, dude. Like, yes, the body count is officially at 12. 2 U.S. Marshals, 1 mom, da-da-da-da-da.
And they show Pete holding the big old fish. He's all like, right, oh, man, that guy had a good life.
That's right. Local liquor store owner for Liquor World, Pete da-da-da. They find a little shitty hotel where they're going to try and bunk up for a little while. Richie, they get the hostage in, they go in there. And I think the way he's talking to the hotel guy was funny. Like, ding, 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 like beating on the plane.
The guy comes out like zipping up his pants, like he was jerking off or something. He's like, what the fuck do you want? Right. He's like, I want a room, you mean old bastard.
Right.
The fuck do you think I want?
they get a, oh, damn it, all right. They get this room. Hostage and Richie are going to stay there while Seth goes to pick up some burgers. And this is the one scene in the movie that still unnerves me to no end, dude.
Oh, dude. And this is a brave fucking writing thing because you do not have your main character fucking do shit like this and like still be likable or funny.
Right. Because this is where we really learn the depth of Richie's mental health stuff.
Yeah.
What's going on? So the hostage is there. Seth's a really nice guy for the most part. I mean, he's pretty civil. Like he's not going to murder you and like he's on a mission. And as long as you're like not getting right in the fucking way, he seems like, hey, I will let you go. Like this is you're part of the plan right now.
Right.
Whereas Richie, on the other hand, gets left alone with this woman in the hotel room. He goes into the bedroom, which had the doors open into the little sitting area. She's on the couch. He turns on some cartoons and it's like, hey, you want to come over and watch TV? Come on. And he starts like patting on the bed,
dude. Yeah.
Yeah. Come on over. We cut to Seth walking back into the room. We don't see anything else. He's come back
with
in.
Some big Kahuna burger.
Right. Yeah. Got apples and the red apple cigarettes and shit. He goes to give the food. Richie's out in the sitting area now, and the bedroom door is closed. And he hands Richie a burger, and he's like, ah, fuck, my hand. He, like, slaps it right into his hand, like, fuck you, dude. It's your fault. Like, you ruined this. And he has two burgers left in his hand, though, and he looks at him, and he realizes he had one for the hostage and one for himself. And again, that's where we see Seth's, you know, the antithesis of Richie's depravity. Seth really is a compassionate person. He's like, yo, this woman is scared, probably a little bit hungry. He tells her, just don't yell. And then we get Seth opens. He's like, where's the fucking hostage, Richie? Where's the fucking hostage? Oh, she's in there. She's in the bedroom. And Richie's just eating his burger, sucking on his drink, looking fine. I wish everyone could see Tiddly Diddly Winks or whatever your name is today, his face right now, because it's getting like scarier and scarier because you know what's coming. And this right here, Clooney's performance, top notch, dude. Top notch. When he's staring into that room and he's just like, Richie, what the fuck did you do?
Yeah.
But then we start getting these half a second flashes
dude, of it. Yeah.
of just mayhem everywhere, blood everywhere, dead body on the fucking bed. And that's where he really gets Richie and like throws him against the wall. And he's like, what the fuck is it? Like, and he keeps, you know, promising him once we get to Mexico, this will be okay. They're on the run. They're trying to get across the border, but he really lays it on him, like, what the fuck is wrong with you, Richie? Like that woman wouldn't have hurt. She tried to escape. He tries to sell it. Yeah, like she tried to escape
and I did what I had to do. He's like, that woman wouldn't have said shit if her mouth was full of it. I love that line. I still say
that's a great line. Yeah, that woman, you're right, that woman wouldn't have said shit if her mouth was full. And he's right. And he's like, and so now they are like, we got to get the fuck out of here because we've got dead body everywhere. Let's go try and find us an escape plan. You know, they're looking for the car. Maybe they had seen that on the news because they did turn the news on and saw.
Yeah, yeah.
You
know, like, what's the news say? He's like, they're going to catch us in 4 hours. And they know that they're going to try to cross the border.
Right. Well, that means we have exactly 3 fucking hours, Richie, to get across that fucking border. And they see we've got Harvey Keitel, his son and daughter. So you got Juliette Lewis. And I can't remember, like you said, he doesn't even have a picture on the thing, which is kind of sad because he's good. I mean, he's not bad in this movie. And they are all in an RV traveling across country to have a vacation after, I don't know how long it's been since their mom died, since his wife had died.
It seems like there was like a slow decline of his faith after that because Harvey Keitel's a preacher.
He was a preacher. Yeah. He's a preacher, but he couldn't get over the fact that, you know, God had taken his wife and stuff like that, which kind of like Onyx the Fortuitous when she's like, I turned to the devil for solace. Wait a minute. So you're telling me you lost your husband, started worshiping the devil? Cool. All right. So they, Quentin Tarantino shows up at their door. He shows up and he's like, could we borrow some ice or do you got an ice bucket? Seth's right behind him, comes in with a gun, like, everybody be cool. You be cool. You be cool. I will shoot you in the fucking face unless you be cool. He's constantly telling them all to be cool. So they get in there, or maybe Juliette Lewis was at the pool or something because she shows up after.
Yeah. And she's in a bikini. And that's when you get that icky.
That gross from Richie. Richie is very pervy. And what makes it even worse is once we all learned about Tarantino's foot fetish, I don't know. I still wouldn't do it, dude. Like, I wouldn't fucking do it. It's like that guy, the Slaughtered Vomit Dolls guy who had like a puke fetish and then makes a whole movie about fucking puking everywhere. Like, are you doing weird shit with this after the fact? Like, I don't want to think.
There's a reason they make movies. Movies are hard to make.
He's got a supercut, dude, of just everybody's feet. Everybody's feet. And probably like the ones he's taken from like off fucking set a little bit, you know, just handheld. Like, look at them fucking stilettos. Step on my balls, please.
Yuck.
But he gets very sexually excited about Juliette Lewis. And I think Seth even says, like, what's the deal with you two? Are you gay? Something like that. And he's like, no, he's my son. And he's like, well, he's fucking Asian. And he's like, no, he's Korean. He's like, he's Chinese and you're white. He's like, no, actually, he's Korean. And da da da. Harvey Keitel, another one that just, you can watch chew scenery all day long. Oh, all of it, dude. Yeah. Even Bad Lieutenant, where it's like, that is fucking gross, Harvey Keitel. Right. Like, super gross, but it's still so good. He's just got that range. So the goal now is everybody's going to load up in their big RV. They are going to get them across the border. And then once across the border, they're going to buy. Like, and I believe Seth, like, you believe Seth through all of this. Like, he really will probably just let them go. Yeah. He's going to let them go
in real life. Never, dude. Those people are being buried in the desert.
Right. He's that good criminal though. That good kind. He's gotta be. So they are now intermingling throughout the trip down to the desert. Seth's up front talking to Jacob. They're not getting along at first. You know, he's like, tell me about yourself. He's like, I don't want to tell you shit. He's like, well, fuck you then too. Like, listen, you just get me across the border and you'll never see my fucking face again. Richie's in the back with the kids, with Juliette Lewis. And again,
starts at the foot, dude, slowly pans up, kind of pans back down to the foot, back
back up, and then she looks right at Richie and is like, hey Richie, will you eat my pussy? And he's like, Yeah. But we see that in her mind, she's just looking at him like, why the fuck are you staring at me, creepo?
Yeah. And then Clint, such a weird thing that they added to the movie was like, Clooney's like, hey, Richie, put in your bit. And he fucking puts in his like.
He has like a guard, like a mouth guard.
Yeah, like a retainer. And he's like, I grind my teeth.
I grind my teeth. And it's like, fucking weird, man. But yeah, their relationship is really good too. Like Tarantino plays really well with Clooney. Clooney and Juliette Lewis have an amazing chemistry in this thing. So good. And then we do get to the border, and this is where things get a little bit tense. Are they or are they not going to make it across the border? And to be fair, up until this point, if you knew nothing about this movie, you would not know it's a horror movie.
Oh, absolutely. No. This is a fucking straight up, like, badass dudes doing badass shit. Yeah, it's a Tarantino film.
Crime movie. Uh-huh. Yeah. And so they do get to the border. We get some awesome tension. Like you said, this is our first appearance of the great Cheech Marin. He shows up. They do a little bit of an inspection. Even he's kind of pervy on Juliette Lewis, if I remember it right.
Yeah, she's on the toilet so that they won't come in because the geckos are hiding in the toilet.
Right.
And this is that
Shut
great
the
scene, too.
Door. Yeah.
Where Shut fucking the door. Richie starts talking shit because he gets pissed off at something Tarantino says. Clooney says. Yeah. And he's like, shut the fuck up, Richie. Now's not the time. And then he fucking nails him and knocks him out cold. And she's like, thank you.
Right. He does too. And then when they get across the border, he's like, what happened? He's like, I don't know. You just fell down, dude. Yeah. I got no idea what the fuck happened to you.
Fell down, hit your head on the counter, dude. Broke your glasses. Sorry.
So we're across the border. We make it. We're good. And our destination is the Titty Twister, which is. That's so sexy, dude. Which is a hot spot for truckers, bikers, like the baddest of the bad. They got fucking pyrotechnics outside.
Fuck yeah, shooting. Dude. Coolest bar you'd ever
Coolest
go
bar
to.
Ever, dude. Like, yeah, it's got neon boobies on it that like twist, like the nipples like twist it when it lights up.
Did you know that whole set fucking burned to the ground and they had to rebuild it to finish the movie?
Oh, damn, that sucks. Yeah. Was it an existing? Do you know?
No.
Was
it built the fucking building out in a dry lake bed, dude, and it burned to the fucking ground.
Damn, and then they had to do it again. Well, fuck it. They probably made their money back. Neither Rodriguez, Miramax, or Dimension, or whoever put it out is fucking hurting, except for the one Weinstein.
Weinstein found himself in a little legal trouble.
Yeah, fuck you, Harvey.
But seriously, though, dude, at the time, though, this was a super unproven movie.
And, right.
You know, when you spend probably most of your budget on a fucking location and then it fucking burns.
But they did it. They pulled it off and they approached the Titty Twister like, hey, we've made it. Like we're good. We're going to go in here. We're going to drink some fucking drinks. We're going to eat some fucking food and we're going to have a good time until morning. And then when Carlos or whoever shows up, I can't remember Cheech's other name, but when they show up, we're going to get the fuck out of here. We're all going to go on our merry way and things are going to be great. So we approach the Titty Twister though. And this is my favorite Cheech right here, dude. Pussy. And this dude's an old school harker on a street corner yelling about, we got white pussy, black pussy, sloppy pussy, stinky pussy. And then Juliette Lewis walks up and he's like, ah, new flavor, apple pie pussy. But they get into an argument with him, which they commence on. Seth beats him in the fucking face with his pistol. And then Richie's kicking him in the guts and shit while he's on the ground. And they walk in, they see all this. Seth's excited. He's like, this is my kind of fucking place. You got people shredding guitars everywhere. You know, there's girls dancing all over with big feathers on their heads. It's a super cool spot. They go up to the bar. I want some drinks for me and my friends. They're like, Danny Trejo, so good. This bar is for truckers and bikers only. And he's like, well, fuck you. I'll like fucking kill you too. And now, you know, it's getting bad. But Harvey Keitel shows up real cool. He's like, yo, I'm a truck driver. Like, that's a Class C whatever that I'm driving. So technically, and he's like, welcome to the Titty Twister. And so they go sit down. Clooney's really pissed off. Seth seems really angry. And that's when him and Harvey Keitel have a great moment where he's like, don't you know when you won? He's like, don't you fucking get it? You've won. Like, you got a whole army of fucking people looking for you all over the United States and you've made it across the border. Like, you did it, dude. Like, what are you so mad about? We meet a lot of other characters here. We meet the band. We meet, what's his name? Frost. We meet Frost. Sex Machine is super cool. This is where we see his gun. Uses the fucking bullwhip to snatch a beer from Greg Nicotero. And it's a great effect, dude. Like, it goes right back into his hand and a little bit of the foam and shit's coming off.
Yeah.
It was a full beer that he yanked right back. Nicotero and the homies are like, oh, you want to fucking go? And he's got this belt right over his crotch that this leather flap flips up, and it's a revolver that looks like a dick with two six shooters on either side that look like little balls. And it's the coolest gun ever. And he just like,
can you imagine the recoil on that, dude? It would put you out.
It'd be so bad. Unless it may be some good steel plating. I don't know. He's an effects guy. He could probably get a shock absorber of some sort.
I love it, though, in Desperado in the bar when Antonio opens up the case, the gun is in there.
Yeah, the sex machine gun is in. I love that case. Oh, me and my brother used to talk about that guitar case. Hear stories about a guy with a guitar case full of guns. And you want to talk about great, like Steve Buscemi in fucking Desperado, oh, dude. So fucking good. Anyway, back to From Dusk Till Dawn. So we're here. Everybody's hanging out. Clooney's like, we're going to drink. And, you know, Scott and Jacob, Jacob's like, no, my kids aren't drinking. And Juliette Lewis starts putting them back. Scott's like, I want to try one. They do start to get along a little bit. You know, they're becoming at least an understanding that we're here together. It doesn't have to be a miserable fucking night.
That's what happens when people do crazy shit together.
Right. It is, dude. It brings you together. You bond over the crazy shit. You bond hiding a body. Sancto Pandemonia. Is that what it is? Her name when she comes out? Cause he starts, you filthy dogs, bow your heads. You're about to see, you know, the greatest thing you've ever seen. And that's when the band starts playing. And I can't remember the name of that song, but fuck, it is so good. And Selma Hayek comes out wrapped in a huge snake with a huge headdress just full of feathers in this dark maroony kind of bikini ensemble with gold clasps all over it. She's dancing all over and everybody is just enthralled. I mean, the women, the men, it doesn't matter. Everybody's just watching this match and it is sexy. Like, it is a sexy dance. It is sexy music. You know, it's lit by candle and firelight and shit. Like, it's just done really well. And that's when we get Tarantino being fucking weird again, though, dude. She shoves her whole foot in his mouth and starts dumping a bottle of liquor down her leg. And he's kind of sucking on the liquor. And then like kicks his face away a little bit. I want to say she sees though his blood, right? Leaking out of his hand. And that's when she turns. Cause she's the first one I feel like we see. And then they all go bad real fast.
Yeah. If Cheech comes in, busts in and is like, that motherfucker broke my nose.
Right.
And then this piece of shit kicked me while I was down. And then right. that's going on. That's when she sees his hand dripping and she's like, oh fuck. She gets all like horny for it.
Right. And she turns like the opposite of sexy, which is bald headed, very lizard like. She's almost like a snake.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very serpent like. And the vampires here all start to go quickly. We realize that most of the like people who work there, Cheech, Dan Trejo, the bartender, all of them are vampires and all the girls are vampires. Everybody who had been dancing. And this is where Greg Nicotero and Tom Savini show up and shine because all these vampires are super unique. Yeah. You know, it's not just a one size fits all thing. It's like everybody gets a special face plaster. Everybody gets, you know, custom built to their shit. And these vampires look awesome, dude. They look awesome.
When that one chick, dude, the way they do it, where they set up the scene, like she has turned, they're like, what the fuck? He shoots the fucking one dude and he goes down to the ground, comes back up. He's all fucked up. Cheech turns.
Right.
So shit's about to go down. And that one dancer fucking slides the bar across the fucking gate so nobody can get out. And she's like, dinner is served. And then all fucking hell breaks loose.
Right. And it is insanity, dude. It's insanity. It breaks out everywhere. People are fighting all over. Our military guy, Frost, he's a badass. He's chucking them, just like grabbing them, like whole, like throwing them, you know, up against spikes and shit. The band is now playing fucking Dead Bodies, which is so cool, dude. His Dead Body guitar, where he's just jamming that thing. I'm like, ah, that's rad. Yeah. And then they're like, fuck, good night, and fucking explode everywhere, whatever. But our core group of heroes or I shouldn't say heroes, but our protagonist for the most part is the family that we followed to Mexico. Frost gets in there with them. And is that it?
Sex Machine.
Or Sex Machine's alive for a little while. Yep, Sex Machine before he turns. They get to a back room that they're able to barricade and realize that these vampires have been hoarding everything that the truckers have been moving. So they find all, they're like, what could we use as a weapon? And sure as shit, dude. And this is really cool, though, because this is where they bring back Harvey Keitel's faith.
Right.
They're like, it doesn't matter. He's like, you know, it doesn't matter. And he's like, do you want to be, you know, a little pussy, or do you want to be a mean motherfucking man of God? Yeah. And he's like, I want to be a mean man of God. And you're like, okay, his faith is back. So he can bless, they've got water. He blesses it to make holy water, fill up balloons, fill up super soakers, fill up condoms, whatever you can. And then Clooney finds a fucking jackhammer, dude, and shaves down this big log to just like a giant stake on a fucking motor is what
There's
it is.
There's a few weapons badass in this world. Ash's chainsaw, fucking lightsabers, and then the fucking Clooney's jackhammer.
Because he slings that motherfucker like left and right. He's hitting him on this side, spinning it, hitting that side. So they have this, you know, meeting between all of them and a lot of, you know, if I die, if I turn, you like, you got to promise me. Jacob tells his kids, like, you promise me you will kill me. And Julia Luz is like, I'm down, dad. Like, don't worry about it. She's ready to fight. Jacob's struggling with it more, though. He's like, I don't know if it's, he's like, no, you promise me or I'll kill myself right now. Da 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 da.
Right. Cause he's bit.
Maybe he had been bitten already. Yeah. He just hadn't turned yet. And so they make the agreement, and we go out to fight the fucking vampires, dude. Cool, long, like, tunnel shot, you know, torches burning on the sides and shit. Are you ready? And then
Jacob's
we break
got that
out
shotgun, dude, where he puts a fucking
cross
in it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a pistol grip shotgun that he stuck the baseball bat.
Yeah,
he's got like a small little baseball bat through it.
They're trying to decide like what they have, like what they can use as a weapon, and they're like, just anything. You just put two things sticks together and you got a cross. Peter Cushing used to do it all the time.
All the time, dude. It was Christopher Lee's kryptonite. It was that fucking make anything. It doesn't matter, your fingers. So the vampire army is right at the gate. They go out, begin to fight all of them. Jacob or his son gets fucking chewed up in the worst way.
That shit is nasty, dude. He's got those condoms like on a belt and they're like
everything's
shaking,
like twitching. Yeah, his whole body's twitching. Let's see, Frost, his turn is really cool because he lets them in, more of them in or some stuff.
Sex Machine bites him, and then Frost throws Sex Machine into the door and the door opens and all the bats come flying in.
Right. And we do got to talk about Frost's great delivery about being in war and shit before they fight all of me. He's like, they were everywhere and I'm just stabbing them one right after the other. Really good. So Sex Machine, though, again, these makeups look good, dude. Like Sex Machine's makeup, so good. Frost makeup, so good. Harvey Keitel's makeup, money. Yeah, Harvey Keitel looks amazing. And
at the end, when these vampires come in and it's like their final form, we've got full body prosthetics.
Yes. Like, wings and like leathery, see-through, kind of translucent skin.
You can see some of their pubes.
All their pubes. All the vampire pubes. No genitals, though. We have this circle at the very end, and it's just George. It's just Seth and what's her name again? Not Julia Lewis, but whatever her character's name. I can't remember the character name. Kate. There you go, Kate. So you've just got Seth and Kate are the only ones left. There's a huge, just massive vampires coming in from every direction. And they shoot out because now it's getting to, we only got to make it till daytime. And they start shooting holes in the walls that are burning the vampires as the sunlight is.
She's like, I only got a couple bullets. Should I use them on us? And he's like, fuck no, use it on the next fuck that tries to bite you.
Right. So good. Yeah. Hell no, we're going to make it out of this thing. So they end up doing that. And then he's screaming because he can hear Carlos outside, like break down the fucking door or something like that.
Hello, I'm looking for my friend Seth.
That's right. Seth, are you in there? Hello. And they tell him, break down the fucking door. They break it down, sunlight everywhere. Things start, vampires explode.
Disco ball, dude, and shoots light everywhere.
That's right. Yeah, the disco ball. It bounces off the disco ball and murders all of our vampires. We go outside. My favorite line in this entire movie is right here when you have this conversation between Carlos and I really hope it is Carlos. I think it is, but Carlos and Seth, where Carlos just so nonchalantly, he's like, "What the fuck happened here, man?" He's like, "Were they fucking psychos or something?" And he's like, "No, Carlos, they're not fucking psychos. Psychos do not explode when sunlight hits them." He's like, "I don't care how fucking crazy they are." And he's just like, "Oh, okay, Seth."
So they give him so nonchalant. He's like, "Oh man, well, you want a beer? They're right. Cold." And he's just like, "Fuck off." And he's like, "We got Mexican and domestic."
right. Which I've been to Mexico a lot, and getting cold beer was, you know, kind of like nice, because a lot of the times the beer wasn't super cold. So I get that. Like, why they would say it's cold. You know,
warm changa.
Right. Oh. Seth gives Kate a shit ton of money. And this is also, I think, the first time we see Seth's whole tattoo in the whole movie, right?
Yeah, dude. He finally pulls off that jacket. And you see, we've all seen the fucking tattoo go up his neck a little bit, but it's a full body tat.
Yeah, it's a full sleeve all the way down, just like 90s fucking tribal, dude. It's screaming 1990s tribal. He gives her some money because they don't leave together, right? Or do they end up leaving together?
No, he gives her some money and she's like, "I'm coming to El Rey with you." And he's like, "Do you know what El Rey is?"
Right.
And he's like, "Yeah, you don't want any part of that, you know?"
No. Yeah. She's like, "I want to go with you." And he's like, "No, you fucking don't. Like, you get in, drive the other way. Here's, you know, 50, 100 grand, whatever it was, and just take off." And then we get the, I think, one of the best shots in the movie, dude, that bird's eye that pulls way up, and we see behind the bar, it's built on what looks like a temple, you know, some sort of temple. And there's just semis, like this whole crater just full of trucks and shit like that, all under, you know, that have been all the people they killed over the course of the thing. And we get some great music, and tearing off through the desert. Roll credits.
Dude,
so fucking so
bad. I wanted a sequel to this so fucking bad. I wanted to see Julia Lewis follow Clooney to fucking El Rey, and then the vampires show up to the bar and they find out that all their brethren have been killed, and they fucking go to El Rey to get revenge, dude.
That's not the sequel we got.
Nope. And I still want that sequel, and I want them to meet up with fucking Antonio Banderas' character from Desperado. I want to see Vic Vega fucking from Pulp Fiction. I want to see all these dudes fucking show up in this town and fucking have an all-out vampire battle, dude.
Hey, vampires. Yeah, we got two sequels to this, neither of which.
Tarantino really... Infinity War.
You keep bringing that shit up. I don't want it.
Thanos is a vampire, dude. Come on.
We got two sequels. We got a TV series that I watched a little bit of.
I liked that TV series, dude.
Yeah, yeah. I wasn't mad at the TV series at all. It was fine. But the sequels, not that great. And this one is really kind of the standard. It's the best of the best. If you want any, you know, From Dusk Till Dawn lore or anything like that, this is it. Yeah. This is the way to go. Out of how many sex machines do you give From Dusk Till Dawn?
This one's so hard because we do that Jaws thing all the time. But I will say, I have seen this movie, other than The Crow, this is the movie I've seen the most amount of times, dude. And I'm never sad when I watch it. If I'm in a bad fucking mood, I can put it on, dude. And I'm like, God damn.
That's so good. So you saying five?
I'm going to say 4.75.
We're getting down to quarter points now. But that's fine, dude. For me, it's five. It's five out of five.
Nice, dude.
Me and my one little brother, not the one who used it for the gross reasons, my other brother, we spent a whole summer and we watched it every night. We would just put it on and fucking fall asleep with it on and shit. I think, like you said, you know, and this is these two before they got super big, you know, they were still like hungry for it and shit. And, you know, those original ideas, like, yeah, I got a vampire idea, you know, like this cool kind of thing. Yeah. So for me, it's 5 out of 5. It's right up there with Jaws. I know it's, you know, from a technical standpoint, whatever you could say, you know, this, that, or the other, but from a sheer enjoyable fucking movie experience, 5 out of 5. And the best, my favorite Clooney, hands down.
Oh, hands in
anything,
down.
Anything that man has done, I always go back to this and compare it to it because I'm like, dude, you set the bar way too high.
Yeah, no, he did his first movie. He's like, I'm the coolest motherfucker on earth. Right.
And why didn't he do more action? I think they tried a little bit where he did a couple action things, but it never really picked up. And
it was always elevated action. Like it was never like this pulp
It was like cybercrime and like globetrotting type of action. And it didn't have the grit that this one has. Yeah. So yeah, 5 out of 5, dude, from Dusk Till Dawn. Definitely I'll be watching it again sometime now that we've talked about it in the very, very near future.
I want to see Clooney in like a cool ass Western.
Maybe great in a Western. Did Clooney ever do a Western? At least not one where he's the lead, you know, but he does have a cowboy face. Oh, he definitely has.
He's getting more and more weathered, but just sex. Like he gets sexier and sexier, dude, the older he gets.
Fine wine.
But he's not doing any movies anymore, dude.
I probably wouldn't either if I was in Hollywood right now. Like all of them. You see, I mean, how much money does fucking State Farm have? I'm like, you hired Arnold. Yeah. Like he's your new fucking spokesperson. Right. How much insurance money do you have, dude? But yeah, there, and then you see a lot of it, you know, people getting away from movies and doing TV and stuff now that, you know, premium streaming is an outlet. Like, yeah, okay, I'll come on a $30 million budget, you know, TV show for 6 episodes. Why not? Yeah. Sounds like a good time.
When he showed up for that Flash thing, you know, which was,
yeah, cool.
I thought that was cool. Like I was like, out of any of them, that was the one I would want to see, you know?
And he's always said it, dude. He's like, I know how bad it is. Yeah. He's always, like, he doesn't defend it. He's like, I get it. It is what it is. And fuck it. Yeah. Like, you know, I was Batman.
Yeah. I think that fucking kicked the nuts out of his confidence as far as like being a badass motherfucker. He's like, I'm going to go be Batman. It's my third movie. You know? Right. and then he fucked it up. He's like, oh shit.
Arnold got top billing. He didn't even get top billing on that.
Goddamn, Arnold and Clooney are in a Batman movie. What kind of fucking world do we live in, dude, where that exists?
Dude, the same one where Tommy Lee Jones and Jim Carrey were side by side in Batman movie. Totally, that's the world we live in. Crazy. Or the biggest was Keaton and fucking Nicholson, dude. Like, I was watching one of those on the, I think it was when they put the 4K out. They had some new commentary and shit. And Keaton was talking about how him and Nicholson at one point like looked at each other and were just laughing. They're like, what the fuck are we doing? You know, because nobody thought it was going to be the biggest movie in 1989. They thought it was going to be big, but not that fucking huge, the phenomenon that it became. But yeah, those two looking at, you know, Johnny fucking Dangerously and One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, you know, in these weird costumes, just like, hey, let's do it. And then you got magic, dude. It's magic. I want to follow up with what we talked about last time on the show. And it was a good thing, dude. I never let that anger take me over. And it never did. And before, like the day I had left the place I was at, before I went to sleep that night, I had a new home already in another location that I'm really excited about. Woke up the next day, had a FaceTime call with the owner of the shop. Seems like it's going to be fucking awesome. Like I'm really excited about where I'm going. They seem very excited to have me coming over there. I talked to the lady this morning who I think she's kind of like the manager. I don't know her exact title, but she's sending me a bunch of stuff over to get all that stuff set up. And I would say my wife struggled with it more than I did. Like, you know, she was angry. She was angry about a lot of things. And I'm like, you can, dude. And I tell her the same things. And it's hard. It's very hard. But it works. It fucking works. It feels good to not be angry. Yeah. It feels nice to not be angry. So I went and picked up all my shit today. I got it all in my car. I'm going to take it over there, you know, whenever I end up going over that way. But yeah, I think, you know, I don't know for sure, but had I responded to the situation out of anger, would I even be going to another place?
Right.
I don't know, right. You know, because I'm starting to really feel like the universe gives you the fuck back what you try and give it, dude. It gives it the fuck back. I don't know how else to really explain it.
Nobody gets fucking like shit canned and has a new gig the next, like later that day. You go fuck yourself with your fucking positivity.
My wife, Shayna, says, she's like, you really are one of them people. She's like, you could fall off a shit truck and smell like roses when you have to come.
That's perfect, dude. That's
I told her the same thing. I was like, that is kind of perfect. I said, I like the way that sounds. But there's nothing fucking unique about me or special about me. It's just I take the time to stop. Like, that's what it's boiled down to, is take the time to stop. Realize what you can control. The only thing I can truly control 95, 8, 9% of the time is how I respond to the things that are happening around me. I can meet them with anger or I can meet them with some kind of calm. It doesn't mean the anger doesn't exist. Like, I'm not trying to get to this place where I believe I'll never be an angry person, because that's illogical. That doesn't make any sense. I'll never be sad again. That doesn't make any fucking sense. But it's knowing, stopping, just stop for a second to say, okay, how am I going to approach this? And, you know, it was a lot of breathing. Like I was even breathing during conversations and shit, like just slow breathing. Just keep yourself calm. Keep yourself calm. Listen, be a listener. Just sit and listen. Don't try and, you know, jump back right away. Let somebody else talk. And then in all of my meditations, it's like I told you last time, you know, it's I wish everybody well. Like I genuinely mean that shit, too, because it's. Selfishly, it frees me from that burden. Like I don't have to think about that. I never have to fucking, it doesn't even bother me at all. I'm just continue on with forward path. Look at life where you're going. And this opportunity could be fucking amazing. Like I already know in some areas, it already looks like a really good, it's a great fucking opportunity. It is a fucking unreal opportunity.
That's what's crazy is that you're going to a better place.
And I think that's how you look at it, though, you know, is I looked at it as that opportunity is I tried to say to myself, like, hey, what is the good that could come out of this? Because if I'm angry about it, and you and I talked about this last week as well, if I'm angry about it, there's really not a lot of good. Like what good could come out of me being pissed and starting to blame other people? The second you blame somebody else for your fucking problems, you're failing.
Right.
You are failing. The second you say it's your fault that I'm fucking like this. No, it's not. It's your fault that you're responding to that like that. Like, it's your fault that you're giving all of that real estate to some shit that, you know, probably doesn't even really fucking matter or, you know, the people aren't really thinking about you. But to the thought interruption, you know, it is if I see the anger coming, I'll stop. And whatever that anger is focused towards, I'll completely shift and be like, I wish love and kindness and peace towards that. I wish love and kindness and peace towards that. And I'll sit there and meditate on that shit. I don't care. Sometimes for 10 minutes and just be like repeating the same shit, you know, going through it. But now I'm at a place where it does happen much quicker. Like it's like a flip of a switch. At first, you know, I'd go 2-3 days thinking about the same shit. Like, right. Fuck that motherfucking fuck. Like people have no idea how angry of a human being I could be. And it was ugly, dude. It could be ugly at times. Or, you know, not seeing the full, I was just reading something on that. Let me see if I can find it really quick. So this is that, and actually I'm going to pick up this book. This is called Taking Responsibility from Miguel Atwood Ferguson. And it says, chanting the Lotus Sutra is a way of renewing my vows with myself and the cosmos. And this next line is what I like a lot. For me, it's about learning to see the essential true nature of life. Learning to see beyond the illusion and to take responsibility for my dreams. Because in this world, nobody's going to give you anything, you know? And if they do, you'll probably be irresponsible with it. You'll probably fucking squander it. It'll go quick. You know, it is how stuff like that goes. You see people win the lottery all the time. It's the lottery phenomenon. Within like 2 years, like how'd you spend $125 million in 2 years and you're broke as fuck? I don't get it, but hey, some people do that thing. But you know, when they talk about the illusion of life, and I think our illusion stems from our personal perceptions. It's the lens through which we see reality is the illusion. And the idea is to try and remove the lenses as best as possible and see reality for exactly what it was. And in this particular situation, reality was, okay, I'm not in this place anymore. Reality. Just accept that. I didn't think about why I wasn't there. I didn't think about who, you know, might have been involved in the reason why I wasn't there. All I could accept was I am not at this place anymore. I didn't sit on that shit for 10 minutes before I started reaching out to people. And I was like, hey, man, this is my situation. You know, I'm kind of in. Do you think you might know? Da, 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 da. And there was no anger, dude. I don't even know how to articulate this in a way where I can express like it feels unnaturally amazing.
Right.
But it doesn't feel natural. I feel like my natural response for my entire 41 years on this life was if somebody slights you, you get fucking angry about it and you be mean about it. And I'm like, no. And you can say no. It's a hard thing to fucking do because we've been conditioned from childhood, dude. Right. And we see it around us all the time. Like who didn't see their fucking mom or dad getting pissed at somebody or yelling on the fucking phone with a fucking collector, you know, oh, I paid that, da, 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 da. You know, everything is external. And if you can start to see it that way, just barely start to see it that way, then it all starts to make a lot more sense. You start to see the interconnected nature of all things, you know, and me and you being not independent of one another, like we're interdependent, we're connected completely. No matter how you look at it and continue to break it down, you'll see that like everything is connected. And that I believe is the illusion. The illusion is the idea of self, maybe. I don't know, but it seems like the illusion would be the idea of self, and how could that happen to me, instead of us? I see the suffering in you, and I really don't want you to suffer anymore. Like, that sucks. I'm not going to sit here and like be your fucking helping hand, like grab you by the wrist and be like, you do this, do that, do this, do that. No, because it only comes from, it's got to come from within the self. You know, there's people that can point you in the direction. Nothing I've ever learned was my own idea. Nothing. You know what I mean? All this shit that I talk about, nothing was my own idea. So the information's out there. You can go fucking find it, you know, do a couple breathing things. But that illusion of the self is, I think, what really gets us angry and where anger comes from, because we feel like it was a personal affront on a independent being, you know, but we're all breathing the same air. We all need the same water. We're full of the same, you know, H2O, everything functions relatively the same. You can follow the genetic material back far enough to really show that we're all connected. You can be like, oh yeah, like, give me a little swab of your DNA. No, fuck it. Here you go. Yeah. And that's how far you go back to fucking Neanderthals. I'm like, what the fuck? Like, what the fuck? So all right, that's my Neanderthal great, great, great granddaddy. But yeah, it's just crazy how it worked out, man. I don't know. It is. It's crazy how it worked out. And I feel like it worked out in the way it was supposed to, partly because I just accept the way it is. As opposed to, you know, fighting, said, oh, it should have done that. Oh, only if this fucking thing was this way or that fucking thing was this way, then it'd be in my favor, you know?
Right.
Nah, it just is exactly what the fuck it is. It is what it is. Complaining is non-acceptance of what is. Nice. Complaining doesn't do shit, dude. Like, it doesn't do shit. So yeah, things are cool. I'm going to be jumping onto a new shop. Very excited about where I'm going. I talked to the owner of the shop, and I was looking at my Sword of Omens over here, the Thundercat sword, and I sent him a picture. I said, yo, I got room for this shit. He's like, oh, we got you. I'm like, sweet. I'm going to have a Sword of Omens hanging up in my booth.
Hell yeah.
Give me sight beyond sight. So yeah, leave anger alone if you can, and see the connected nature of everything. Figure those out. I know it sounds easy, right?
Oh yeah, I'm literally still struggling with it, but like seeing you out there doing it, fucking, it does warm my heart. So
and you could, there's no difference between me and you, dude. Absolutely zero. You could accomplish the same things. And the I would say the big thing though is just remember, you know, a ship is not turned on a dime. You got to slowly turn the rudder. You're not going to, like, that's where I feel a lot of people fail, where they'll wake up one morning and be like, I'm going to be this from here on out. It's like, no, that doesn't work like that. You know, you're going to burn yourself out, and you're going to feel like a failure over and over and over again. You're going to feel like a piece of shit. A ship has to be turned really slow. And it's just monitoring those incremental turns, you know, like, okay, this is the first time since I started this stuff, maybe 3.5 years ago, where I was like, I really did not get angry about that. And I cannot believe this shit actually paid off in the way it paid off. I can't believe it fucking worked, but it worked. And I'll just keep doing it because it seems to keep fucking working. But it takes time. You know, for me, it was a lot of days spent breathing, trying, forcing myself to, you know, thought interruption and things like that. But now the ship's going the other way. And that shit looks nice. That view looks nice, dude. It looks so much nicer than the direction I was headed in. And so it does take time, but anybody listening to this, you yourself can turn that shit around. Just start making those little. And if you really wanted some information, you know, you're like, hey, I want to explore that shit, let me know. Fucking send an email to the podcast email or whatever, and we can talk about some shit if you want to.
Yeah. Speaking of that, we do have a brand new podcast email. Horror Pop Podcast. I left out the extravaganza because that shit's hard to spell.
Hard word to spell.
So it's a horrorpoppodcast@yahoo.com. You can get on there and check it out. We're also on Instagram now. I actually just switched my Popcorn Promises into Horror Pop so we wouldn't lose any of our followers. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so you can get on there and check us out. And that's at the Horror Pop Podcast on Instagram.
And thank you for doing that, dude. I appreciate that. I was just talking to a friend of mine a couple days ago about the podcast, and you know, one of the stipulations coming in was I don't want to do that shit anymore. Like, right, I did it for way too long. And so I appreciate you taking, you know, the time to put that stuff together, and hopefully we'll reach a few more people and yeah, keep chit-chatting about fun stuff. So From Dusk Till Dawn, great movie, watch that, be nice to yourself. For the Horror Pop Extravaganza, episode 17 again, I have been Pops Ghostly.
And I forgot my fucking name.
It's like Diddy Diddly Winkers.
Shit.
And I forgot my name. We'll talk to you next week.